It's time to step inside the Iketagon with your host, Ike Feldman.
What's up, fight fans? What is up, fight community? Combat sports community? What is up, everybody who enjoys watching another human being get pummeled? And I'm not talking about over, under, Greco, roaming, warming up. I'm talking about somebody's face literally being bounced off the canvas, as one Conor McGregor would say. And we do have a lot of Conor McGregor coming into each of our lives starting next week, I believe it is, with the Ultimate Fighter, the Michael Chandler, Conor McGregor Ultimate Fighter. I believe it is number 32. 32. And I'm going to talk about Tough 32. I believe it's 32. I'm going to talk about Lomachenko versus Haney. I'm going to talk about Terrence Crawford, Errol Spence happening. Oh, yes. And I'm going to talk about these topics with my main man, Francisco Guzman of Boxeo Mundial / MMA Mundial. Francisco, he's a humble guy. He's a modest guy. I really do appreciate his style. I really do appreciate the way he carries himself. Francisco, like me, come from a military background. Our fathers, other members in our family. No, we are not ready to go to war for our country, but we are ready to go in a hand-to-hand combat dispute for our sport. We love boxing. We love mixed martial arts. We love combat sports. And I've known Francisco, associated with him, rubbed elbows with him. That is a term that means, I guess, hung out, even though it could sound like a fighting term or a different F-word term. But Francisco is the man. I think it was UFC 208 in Brooklyn, Barclays Center, where we kind of said hi in passing. It was during the UFC 208 media scrum. Jermaine Durandamy, Holly Holm. We remember that fight event, though many of you have probably forgotten it or would like to forget about UFC 208. I believe there was only one finish on that card. I believe it was Jacare Souza beating Tim Boach via Kimura. Very boring card. I managed somehow through the back networks to get my two brothers tickets to the event. Holy moly, they've never been to a UFC event. They're going to go to, I think, the second UFC event ever in New York City history. UFC 28, Barclays Center, let's go. The new Barclays Center. We got UFC Anderson Silva. We got Dustin Poirier. We got Holly Holm. It was one of the most boring events in history, and I've apologized to my brothers ever since then. And they're like, no, it's okay, it's okay. No, it was fun, we had fun. I go, guys, stop it. That's one of the worst events ever. No, we had fun. I'm going to bring him in now, Francisco Guzman of Boxeo Mundial and MMA Mundial. Francisco.
What's up, brother?
I'm doing great. Always better when we're chatting. I put up a plywood wall in front of me. I'm trying to like enclose, make something of a studio. So I'm just, this is the first time I've recorded since I put it up this weekend. Yeah, framing, stud work. That's how we do it around here. We're all in one company when it comes to the Iketagon. But my apologies if you hear echo. What do you remember about UFC 208?
What are UFC 208? What do I remember? I'm trying to remember which fight we're talking about. Exactly. Yes. The Randamie and Holmes. Yes. How could I forget? It was a boring fight card. It was also controversial, right? Geronimi had hit her, like when the bell rang a few times. She was a little bit dirty in that fight. And some people felt that Holmes had won that fight, you know?
Wow. Yeah, excellent memory. Even though everybody's forgotten about it, you remember, my man. I think there's only been two press conferences in the last 6-7 years that Dana White, during a pay-per-view event, has not attended. One was UFC 270 when one Francis Ngannou beat Ciryl Gane. We understand why Dana wasn't in person.
Yeah, he didn't show up there.
Didn't hand the belt around him. And then two was UFC 208. So, we were part of history in a way.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. I remember some of my media member friends were hammered. It was so boring that they got hammered during the event. And then when Anderson Silva comes, they start cheering him on. Like, and you know those things are, like, dead quiet. Everybody's got, like, deadline work. And they're clapping for Anderson. I was like, you guys are a mess.
Yeah, that was a terrible fight for Anderson also. Some people thought he lost that fight, right?
Oh, my
gosh. So, yeah.
Speaking
Brunson of... Brunson put up a better performance than we thought, you know, so... Yeah.
Speaking of people thinking people lost or won a fight or questionable decisions... What are your thoughts about – I was just about to make up some fight name. Like, I was going to say, what's your thoughts about Ramirez versus – no, I'm just kidding. We're here for Lomachenko versus freaking Haney, man. In my opinion, now I have to be forthright, always truthful. I'm not a boxing expert. That's why we are bringing in Francisco Guzman of Boxeo Mundial and MMA Mundial to break down everything boxing. This dude has trained. He speaks. He walks the walk. He talks the talk. I mean, better combination. Hello, ESPN. You got a guy in New York. Get this man a job already. Let's go. No, I'm kidding. I'm sure he's happy, loving everything he's doing for Boxeo Mundial.
Boxeo Mundial, yes. Thank you.
I was watching this fight on my phone, which is never a great vantage point. My son's running around. There's rounds where I'm missing. The early rounds I was missing. I tuned in. I probably missed like 3 out of the 12 rounds. The rounds that I saw, Loma looked dominant. He looked like he was landing flush. He looked like he was catching Haney in that half step. Like as the smaller guy, it looked like his like kind of a McGregor versus Diaz, where you got the bigger guy, the longer guy, but McGregor's catching him in between the step. The timing was there. In my opinion, I thought Lomachenko won, but apparently experts are saying this is not the first time that close decisions happen, and people should stop throwing around the word robbery. What are your thoughts about the fight?
Definitely not a robbery. It was a super, super tight fight. Rounds were super tight. Devin Haney started off strong, a lot of body work early. You kind of felt that Devin Haney was going to take over that fight with those body shots. But you saw Loma just start to pick up the pace slowly, start taking away rounds slowly. By the middle of the fight, he was probably losing about 2 rounds, but he kept turning up little by little. And what I saw was the most definitive round in that fight by any fighter was, I would say, Lomachenko in the 11th round. That 11th round, if you look at the punch stats says 20-2. I watched the round again. I don't think Haney landed 2 punches. I mean, maybe there was a lot of punches that missed Loma, but Loma definitely, that 11th round, he took over. Like, it looked like if he kept going that way, he might have either scored a knockdown or got a stoppage. But I think because he fought hard in the 10th and the 11th round, because the 10th was also a definitive round for Loma, but that 11th round was the biggest round, was the most one-sided round that you could score on that fight. You know, you had rounds that were close between Loma and Haney, but that 11th round was all Loma. It seemed like he was on speed. I mean, this dude was all over the place. But in the 12th round, even though I gave the round to Haney, it seemed like Loma gassed, you know. I mean, you know, he's getting old, you know. I mean, he's 35, 36 or whatever. He took the round off. But to me, it just didn't seem like he had, from those two rounds that he put all that effort in. I mean, fighting a bigger guy, much taller, much bigger guy. He's been fighting bigger guys for a long time. And he just, I thought he gassed. I thought Haney got the edge a little bit towards the end of the round. It wasn't a huge Haney win. For those reasons, I thought Loma edged him, you know, because it's that close of a fight. I mean, even the punch stats is 110 to 124. So 110 Haney, 124 Loma. It's only a 14 punch difference, right? So it's not that huge of a difference. But if you had a race, right? If you had a race, right? The guy that got his foot over the line first usually is the winner, even if it's that close by a second or two or whatever. He got 14 more punches off, if you want to say, you want to give that edge to Loma. But it was that close of a fight. It wasn't a robbery. I was sad to see the champ. I was sad to see Loma lose like that, because he gave it all he had. And he was supposed to be old. That fight, you know how many people picked against him that said, Shakur, who walked in the ring and actually spoke to him, said himself, if you go online, he said that Haney was going to wash Loma. And what did he say after the fight?
Wow, yeah.
He said Loma should be undisputed champion. So that says a lot.
Yeah, and
Loma changed a lot of people's minds.
It does say a lot that Shakur Stevenson said that. He said that Loma was putting the pressure, and he said that he won that fight. Now, I don't know if he was enjoying himself or like in there. Maybe he wasn't completely sober, like many of the people ringside. Oh, and excuse me, my apology if Shakur has never even touched alcohol. But the point is that sometimes sideline eyes or ringside eyes could be different than what people see on the camera, on their phones. When people do the CompuBox numbers or the fight stats, are they ringside or are they watching from a monitor?
Well, I had a buddy of mine who did the punch stats for HBO.
Oh, wow.
And they would sit in a monitor room and they would do the punch stats from there, you know? So they would watch the fight, and as they watch in the fight, they would press a button. That's how the punch stats are done. So the punch stats are not super accurate, no.
I agree. Like, how you're telling me they can see the difference if it's going to hit the forearm or it's going to hit the eyebrow?
Yeah. And especially angles, right? You got the fighter's back to you and he's getting hit. And if the camera's
Good
not
point.
On there, like,
Good
you
point.
Would have a, you would yeah. have to have a 360 view of everything that's going on. And there's room for error.
I agree. I freaking agree, man. I test. I think it was, and Max Kellerman's like, but those Haney body shots, man, those were very hard to be. No freaking doubt. But now, again, this is the MMA fan first coming into the boxing world. Do they judge damage first and foremost, or is volume more important? Like, because if we're judging damage, Lomachenko's 10th or 11th rounds were more damaging than any body shots that Haney threw for the first six.
Yeah, you know, that, like I said, that was the only round that I could see one guy won definitively. A lot of rounds, Haney edged him in maybe output, maybe those body shots, you know, a lot of good body work, you know what I'm saying? But as far as like a definitive round where Haney just washed home Loma, and we thought that Loma was going to get beat, because even in a corner, Haney at one point came back and said he keeps hitting me with those left hands. You know, he's doubling the left or something to that approach. So he seemed bothered by that. He was bothered by Loma, because Loma was leading with the left, and then he would throw one or two or even three straight lefts. You know what I'm saying? But you know, like I said, it was a super close fight. Haney did some good work. I'm not taking nothing away from Haney. He fought a hell of a fight. He just almost lost it at the very end. He seemed a little befuddled and lost. And you could see when he talked up after the fight that he wasn't so, you know, he wasn't talking so confident like he was before the fight. He was saying
True.
This was his hardest test. This was the hardest opponent. He's the toughest opponent he's ever faced. And he knows it. He knows it. Everybody knows it. You understand? I actually had a little bit of a back and forth with a buddy of mine who also was at the fight when we saw each other at the Prudential, right? And he was, I felt like he was trying to troll me on this issue. And I was like, and he was like, oh, you know, this is not a robbery. And I said, I agree. But then whenever I said something about Loma, he's like, he kept trying to bring up stuff, you know, to because he actually said Haney won, right? So this kind of fight can bring up that kind of argument. It depends on what you like and what you see, and it's very subjective to think who won. And you know, and this fight is so close that's what's going on here. That's what you see on the internet. It's growing by the day. You know, I mean, it was that close of a fight. I think a fight like that I can compare it to was Ray Leonard versus Hagler. You know, Marvelous Marvin Hagler. It was that close of a fight that people said. I had said Hagler won because I was a huge Hagler fan growing up. And I was like, no way Hagler lost. You know what I'm saying? I couldn't accept that. And so many people agreed. But after watching it, stop being biased. I watched the fight again. And I had to say, Ray Leonard did what kind of Loma did, but Loma didn't get the win. He stole the show. He took the narrative he took the storyline away from the champion. He came back. The guy that we thought was old and was going to get watched by the younger opponent was kicking ass.
He lost on the scorecards, but won in our hearts.
For sure. For sure.
Oh, man. Again,
unfortunately, that's not what he cared about, right? I mean, he was actually emotional after the fight because he lost. I felt for him, man, because I know he fought his heart out. And, you know, it's the reason why the predominantly the crowd was booing, right? There was a lot of boos after that.
Yeah.
Because it was that close of a fight. I think if Loma would have lost, you know, more convincingly, I don't think the boos would have been there.
I was going to say, I was like, is like half of Ukraine in here? I was like, or are they just blatant, just doing the eye test like Shakur and like myself? But I will have to go look back. And like for a second, I was like, who the hell's Ray Leonard? And I was like, oh, Sugar Ray Leonard.
Sugar Ray Leonard.
All I've heard my whole life is Sugar Ray. And now we got a new Sugar Shane. I mean, Sugar Sean.
Sugar Sean O'Malley, yeah.
Using that name.
You hear about the whole hoopla about?
Let's get into a little later. It's getting hysterical. I hope you're in Boston, man. I'm looking at hotel rooms. Maybe we could bunk up. There might be like 8 media members in one hotel room. Everybody piling in for the fights.
Hey, I've done that before.
it's gonna be fun, man. Get some chowder.
Do you know? I know you got to know who Robin Black is. You got to know who Robin Black
is. Oh, yeah. Robin Black here.
Did you hear Dana going at him at the media scrum?
Heard Robin's response. And Robin's so good at detailing things that I just already know what Dana said. What Dana call him, an old rocker, aging rocker or something? But what the hell was the question? Like, why did Robin come up? Like,
oh, because Robin was talking about fighter, you know, he was talking about Francis Ngannou signing to PFL and fighter pay and talking about how the UFC is more interested.
Touchy subjects.
Yeah. Touchy, very touchy when it comes to Dana.
Our boy with the beard and the glasses to ask Dana questions.
Oh, yes. I forgot his name. I always forget his name.
That's good right now. That's good. We don't want to get him in trouble.
Yeah, we sure need him. We sure need him.
Dana. Like, it's like, oh, boy, where is this going? Whenever he gets the mic, I'm sure everybody's like, oh, God, where's this going?
Everybody... What's coming up next?
Dana, with all your issues, yes, I brought that up, but I'm going to make a point here. I was like, oh, my God. I was like, you better make a point, my man. Really cool guy.
He's a cool dude.
We'll find out if he's still alive in Boston. No. Now, is there something to it that even if the fight isn't favor of Loma, 124 to 110. I believe those are the numbers you
said. No, that wasn't the score. That wasn't the scorecards. The scorecards were 116, 114, 112.
What was the – there was something you said.
That was the punch punches. Stats. I was saying the punch stats.
So
you know, that was
say the punch stats are in the favor that was a total of Loma. Punch stats. Say the pressure, the eye tests are in favor of Loma. Is there something to it that 29-0 going into the fight is just kind of a – in favor of the Haney camp, you know what I mean? Like I said, I'm learning the boxing, and it's a hard thing to see Ryan Garcia to lose that O. His O's got to go. Devin Haney keeps his intact. Is there something to that heading into the fight to build the undefeated record?
Well, I don't think it was. This was the toughest test that Haney could have taken anyway. And he actually beat an undefeated fighter in Gambosos, not once but twice. I mean, when he went to Australia, you know what I'm saying?
Good call.
Haney, fighting Loma was, as you can see, he was taking on a lot. He didn't think he was, and a lot of people didn't think he was, but Loma had something up his sleeve. Loma, you know, he is the most achieved fighter he's ever faced. So, you know, 2-time gold medalist, I think 3-time world champ, you know, fastest to do it also. World champ in his third fight against Gary Russell. You know, you're talking about a guy who's beaten. I mean, he's made guys quit on the way up. And I think once hitting lightweight, which was his ceiling, we saw a chink in his armor. We saw him get knocked down against Linares, you know what I'm saying, and stop him. We saw him with a tough fight against Luke Campbell. He's fighting bigger guys. They talk about he's getting old. No, he's challenging himself against much bigger fighters.
Yeah,
even
I didn't know that.
Even Devin Haney, much bigger fighter, right?
I thought this was the weight class he was always in. I didn't know that.
No, definitely not. You know what I'm saying? Definitely not.
Like I said, man, I watched the whole post fight. I'm learning more, getting more scoops of ice cream of boxing. Like, I was like, damn, he was 130? Or was it 120?
135.
But he started at 130?
Oh, no, he didn't start. He started at 126.
And he could probably make that. Still,
mm-hmm. but he's not going back down. Maybe to 130, but not to 126.
The money fights are at 135. So, again, we're being joined by boxing expert, New York's own Francisco Guzman. Dude is trained, speaks extremely well, extremely knowledgeable about the squared circle sport known as boxing. Francisco, so what's next for Vasily? What's next for Devin? And we probably won't get a rematch.
Well, there's a lot there for Devin. Devin could, you know, you got Shakur Stevenson, you got Tank Davis, you got Teofimo Lopez at 140, who's fighting in June. I think it's June.
I believe you're so, right.
Yeah, so I just, there's a lot for Devin to take right now. Maybe he should have a warm up fight before fighting any of these guys or whatever. And you know how tough it is. We just got news yet last night that supposedly Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence are going to face each other. So, you know, let's see if this keeps going. If we keep getting the best fighting the best. I mean, this is what boxing needs, you know.
What did I say, man? I think boxing is taking over MMA. The fights are being made. It's going to happen in 5 years. Ngannou versus John Jones.
You know. Yeah. Boxing taking over? I don't know about that. I was just listening to Luke Thomas today about talking about the stats, about how he was talking about the revenue that the UFC is bringing in, and it was ridiculous. Like these guys, is the reason why the PFL and, you know, what is it? PFL and
Bellator,
I can't even get it. But Bellator and PFL are they're not bringing in, they're not getting anything on the back end. You know what I'm saying? Not like the UFC is by far.
What does that mean?
By far. What does that mean?
Yeah, like that. What does that mean? Like the UFC's bending over and somebody's putting dollars on them. Like, what does that mean on the back end?
No, the UFC. What I'm saying is that their revenue, what they're getting after cost, is ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? I think they're up to like $300 million this year so far.
Damn.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Okay. And that's
so. And the PFL and Bellator are not even bringing in. They're not even getting those numbers. They're not even benefiting in those numbers.
So then why is Dana even engaging with Robin Black? I'm telling you, it's like he. Somebody said that this great saying
because,
about him.
Because
he's.
I think that
has a
you know,
long
he's
memory
the big dog.
And a short temper.
Yeah. So that he's the big dog, you know. He's you know, he's gonna talk, you know, he's gonna say what he feels. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, even though he said he did like the guy from the PFL, right? But then in another breath he said he had to lay a little insult in there. So yeah.
Do you believe in some future alternative universe that we will have a And I'm not saying PFL versus Bellator. I'm not saying Bellator versus ONE or Rizin. I'm talking about one of those leagues facing a UFC league, a welterweight versus welterweight champion, a light heavyweight versus light heavyweight, bantamweight versus bantamweight champion on a pay-per-view event New Year's Eve. Do you believe that will ever happen, a crossover event? Or is Dana White just so advanced, so far ahead of the promoting game that he won't let that happen? He'll buy out a Rizin, a ONE, a Bellator before it becomes on par with the UFC.
That's the point, is that if he doesn't need to, they care about the money. Even if people want to see the fights, UFC cares about their revenue. What are they getting on the back end? And if it doesn't make sense to them, they won't do it. I mean, the only reason I believe that, you know, Conor McGregor was able to fight Floyd Mayweather was because there was a lot of money. They made it, I think, close to what they Floyd made close to what he would have made when he fought Pacquiao, right? So it was the only reason why it happened. And when you saw what happened, right? As soon as that fight got made, Dana White just walked away. He did no promotion for the fight. He pretty much got his money and walked away, you know?
Rumor has it that he got about, or the UFC, and I'm sure Dana White as well, got 70% of Conor's $99 million. So, I mean, though Conor's happy walking away with $25 to $30 million, Floyd, north of $200 million, he's seeing a lot more than Conor for that fight.
Oh, yeah, for sure, because Conor had to give some of his purse away, right? And it's like I said, it was the only reason why the fight got made was because, you know, if Conor would have said, no, I'm pocketing this money and I'm, you know, it's for me, you know, like if he was just trying to keep the money for himself, I don't think they would have let him fight. Not at all.
The same way I text you that, man, combat sports, I wish it was free on a CBS, a Fox, a NBC, a ESPN. If they did a McGregor Diaz 2, the $1.6 million, put Conor versus Khabib, the $2.4 million. Put Francis Ngannou versus John Jones, you're getting 15, 20. I swear it's going to pass in NBA playoff game and ratings, whether that's 15 mil. Does it get to the 30, 40, 50 mil that the NFL does during the playoffs and the Super Bowl? Maybe not. Maybe in time. Maybe if you keep delivering it. I believe, doesn't the Super Bowl charge like $1 to $4 million for 30 seconds? I know the UFC is like, no, but we actually get the money the next week with the pay-per-views. I know it's eating it on the front end and eventually getting it on the back end, to steal your words. but I think the same thing could have been said with McGregor promotions. You saw it on the canvas versus Floyd Mayweather. If McGregor just said, no, I'm going to take you to court, I'm way more valuable, I don't care if you sue me for $10 million, I'm going to make so much more if I do McGregor versus Floyd, McGregor versus Paulie Malignaggi versus Manny Pacquiao versus Nate Diaz 3, if he did it all under a McGregor promotions. Like, I just think people don't see the forest from the trees, or have enough foresight, or just don't believe in themselves enough, as crazy that is. I think you got to rip away the shackles from the corporate structure. And it's just, I'm proud of Francis Ngannou. Maybe he shakes up something for the long term. I believe he's obviously got many steps to go, that he could be this generation's Muhammad Ali. He carries himself so humble. And I say this all the time, that Francis Ngannou in public is so humble. Connor's this brash idiot. But behind the scenes, Dana and Connor are slapping fives, playing video games, driving together. Behind the scenes, I think Francis Ngannou looks through the eyes of Dana White like a man, and he demands what his worth is. And Dana White gets shook and shaken by that, and he wants him to kowtow and bow down to him like Connor slapping five and hanging out. I think Francis Ngannou could do something really special. He just has to not lose.
You're right. You know, that's the point that I'm trying to say, is that Conor McGregor, first of all, we got to point out that Dana White is, I think he's half Irish. He has an Irish background.
He's from Boston.
That could be a reason why he's got this great affiliation with Conor McGregor. also, Conor McGregor helped the UFC than any other fighter. You understand? He was able to, even with the controversy and everything. I mean, what fighter got away with the things that Conor got away with, and Dana did not say a goddamn thing? You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
You know, you know, everybody gets it. When something happens, everybody gets it. John Jones got it. You know, Ngannou got it. I mean, you know, Tito Ortiz got it. Like, he's gone into it with everybody. Every big fighter that he's had, he's gotten into some ish with. You understand what I'm saying? And I'm saying ish because I'm trying not to curse. But, you know, and that's the thing is what I was trying to say before is that UFC profits are so great, you understand, that by far, you know, these organizations like PFL and Bellator don't get any profits compared to what the UFC is getting. You know what I'm saying? So, and I heard they're getting no profits, that they're actually losing on the back end. You understand? So when you look at an organization like the UFC that is King Kong, is the elephant in the room, they're gonna just say and do what they I mean, we know that they're growing in numbers. I think the numbers before the COVID, before we had the lockdown, was 177 million in profits, right? During the COVID, wow, during the lockdown, they went up to 200 million in profits, right? And I'm talking about after expenses, after everything. I think it was Luke Thomas that said it earlier today, because he was reading the numbers. I believe it was up to 300 million. So you're talking about these other organizations that are not bringing in those numbers, right? And the UFC is bringing 300 million and growing. You understand what I'm saying? And that's the problem. And you know what he said that really was interesting? He said that these guys are not going to be able to touch the UFC at all. What's going to change things is if there is government, is Congress, is the Muhammad Ali Act, just like it did in boxing. That will stir things up. And since the UFC doesn't have that, they could do what they want. They don't have to pay you if they don't, you know what I'm saying? They don't give a shit. They don't. And we know that there's not just one fighter complaining about fighter pay, but a lot of fighters. Even Al Jermaine right now, you know, is having a little bit of a stir. So I don't know what to say, man. I mean, hopefully one day we'll see these fighters get better pay. Maybe somebody will do something to stir the pot, because like I said, the UFC is growing. You understand? They just brought WWE. They're growing in numbers. I mean, that.
Good point.
Yeah. I don't even know what else to say.
That's why I love you, man. You bring it all, the knowledge of training, the knowledge of the sport, and then the numbers, man. The statistics, the analytical side of it, man. Yeah, yeah. If it's not a rival league like the PFL or Bellator that can kind of humble the UFC and Dana White, it would probably be the government. Like, and as much as Dana White wanted to get the UFC going again in April, I believe, when the pandemic started, and he was looking at Native American reservations and ways to get it going, loopholes in the government. Even the Disney guy said, dude, cool your jets, because the government was telling Disney and the UFC to calm down. So Luke is right in that. You know, he hates steroids, which I agree, and he also wants the fighters to get paid, which, of course, we all agree with. Few know about this, and others will start to catch wind. I didn't realize it, and I don't really mind it, because you can get the Hamzats who then start making the hundreds of thousands of dollars in their fifth fight. I don't have an issue with it right now, but if you start watering down, and watering down is a strong term or phrase, if you start kind of making it top-heavy, the fight cards where you have Aljamain or John Jones versus a Francis Ngannou, and then you have everybody underneath making 10-10, 5-5, 7-7, 20-20, and you just do that, because everybody's like, they did this contender series to create this incentive-based environment, and then you get these guys in the UFC who are going to make $10,000 fighting in the Prudential Center, Madison Square Garden. They're going to put on a hell of a fight, and they're literally going to take back like $2,500 for themselves. I mean, that model seems to be happening more and more. And again, if they really want to do it and they win five in a row, all of a sudden they are the Hamzat. They are the Paddy Pimblett. So I understand what Dana White says, incentive-based, kind of make it like a jail yard mentality. You know, everybody's out for everybody. Don't trust anybody. Kind of like build, climb off this guy's back. If you want to win, you see the clip of the Ultimate Fighter 1, and now that the Ultimate Fighter is coming back, I want to ask you about that, Michael Chandler, Conor McGregor. But with the Ultimate Fighter coming back, the first clip now gets recycled where the guys didn't want to fight each other. They're like, wait, what? We're all friends living in a house. Now we got to fight each other. He goes, if you want to be a fighter, you're going to fight. I understand that mentality. What I don't understand is why the fighters aren't getting finish bonuses. You know, you want more exciting fight. I think that's the point of Dana White. He says, no, we can't. We could give the show bonus, never the win bonus. Okay, I get it. Give them a finish bonus. Make the incentive to make the cards faster. This should be like minus money if there's decisions. And you give them a finish bonus if there's a finish. Do you agree with that?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, if you're saying that fighters should earn their pay, right? Then yeah, give them what they fought their hearts out. You understand what I'm saying? And when you do see fighter pay, you go, really? You know? Because you know that fighters have to pay taxes. Fighters have to pay trainers. Fighters have to pay gym fees. Fighters have to pay so much on the back end, food, et cetera, right? And the more they bring in to get conditioned for these fights, the more they have to pay. You understand? So, yeah, you know, a guy walks away with $50,000. He's not walking around with $50,000. You know what I'm saying? We know this. You know, those that know. So the point is, my thing is that why build yourself a reputation around a brand like that, right? Why continually, you know, when fighter pay is brought up, you know, you lash out, you call people names, you say all this stuff. And all the writers and all the people that are there, all the media knows what's going on. If everybody could agree that fighters are not getting paid enough. That is, you know, and then you look at boxing, right? Where actually the UFC is making more money than any boxing organization right now, period. Okay. Wow. So, and these guys are paying them millions of dollars to fight, right? So you're telling me the UFC can't pay their fighters more, man? Come on, they can. They're making a lot of money. You understand what I'm saying? But for whatever reason, they feel like, no, you know, we're not, as long as they're not forced to do it, you know, I mean, you just keep bringing all the pot to yourself, and you know, don't worry about it, man. You know, I'm gonna give you some stuff so you can keep fighting, and because guys are hungry. Guys want to make money. So what other organization can they go to? They can't go to boxing. They've been devoting themselves to martial arts for so long. They can't do that. They can't go to another. They go to an organization like PFL. If you look at it, most fighters that do that are fighters that are pretty much at the end of their careers, right? They're looking for a way to keep their careers going. So they go to the PFL. They go to Bellator. They go to ONE Championship. I mean, the mistake they made was with Demetrius Johnson going over there. Demetrius Johnson just proved he was a greater fighter. You understand what I'm saying? By making history over there, right? But that's what I'm talking about. These more fighters, honestly, would I think that reputation may cost the UFC, may down the line. You know what I'm saying? Because if another organization comes through and is able to compete with the UFC, that would make things a lot interesting. An organization that would try to make things right. I'm just saying, but for right now, it's like King Kong versus Bambi. there's nobody that can. you can't beat the elephant in the room. You know,
right now it's King Kong you versus Bambi me when it comes to boxing knowledge. Again, Francisco Guzman, a Boxeo Mundial and MMA Mundial. I do appreciate our conversations, man. Almost 45 minutes have just flown by. Unbelievable, man. Always great talking with you. I got about 5 more minutes here before I got to jump on a different pod. But cool. My man, your thoughts with Crawford Spence. Is this real? Is this fake? Is it April 1st? What the hell's going on? Is this going to happen? And what are your thoughts on
April 1st, April Fool's Day? No, I'm hearing that the fight is made. I think July 26th is the fight. Was it July 26th, the fight date?
But what are your thoughts on it? I'll double check. Don't worry.
Anyway, we have to talk about that some other time. But my thoughts, it just shows you where boxing is. You know, we're clamoring for the biggest fights. We're waiting for the biggest fights to be made. I think we got to go back to Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather. You know, I mean, it was going on for years and years. And when it was finally announced, nobody believed it. Right. It's the same ideology in this with Crawford and Spence, you know. But both guys say they want to fight each other. It's Ring Magazine put it out, ESPN put it out. I think this might be solid. It's the biggest fight. And I'm not even gonna say the biggest. I'm gonna say it's the most competitive fight there is in boxing right now. Cause both guys are pretty much in the same age, you know, 32, 34 around there. You're talking about the two best welterweights in the game.
I'm pumped. I am two pumped. Best. Big fan of Crawford. I always give Crawford credit for being the switch stance boxer and just doing it phenomenally, knocking out people. Power.
I'm gonna tell you this, right? Going back, I was never really huge on Crawford. I mean, I thought he was good, but I was maybe a bit overrated, right? But he changed my mind. You know what I'm saying? I mean, even though I don't think at welterweight he's fought the fighters that Errol Spence has fought, because Errol Spence has pretty much always been a welterweight, you know. But Crawford on the way up, you know, was beating guys. But when he got to welterweight, I said, I think this is a mistake. You know, Spence is a big guy. He's strong. He's a southpaw. He punches really hard. You know, they call him the truth, right? I'm going to tell you something. Crawford, even though he's had a few fights at welterweight, he's knocked them all out, for one. And I think what really solidified it for me was his fight against Sean Porter. Him stopping Sean Porter, even though his dad jumped in the ring and stopped it, maybe a little prematurely, but he didn't knock him down once. He knocked him down twice, and it looked like he was about to knock him down 3 times before his father stepped in. And I think that's why his father stepped in, because when he dropped him the first time and he got up and he put him down again, I think his father knew that a third one was coming and it could have been worse. And I think that's why his father jumped into the ring, not because he couldn't stop him. So I got to say, he actually, you know, he actually, as a fighter, he got my attention.
Amazing. And I hope you're getting enough attention, enough coverage. Francisco Guzman, I'm going to make you a fake Twitter, steal your Instagram info and profile, man. You got to get on Twitter. I'm promoting
this. I'm going to get on Twitter just because of you, bro, because yes, I keep hearing it.
Yes, my man. Francisco.
For sure.
Love you, brother. Always appreciate the
time. Yeah, man, you too, bro.
And let's talk soon. Man, we're going to have to do a three-hour podcast.
Definitely.
Later, brother.
All right, bro.